Good morning, everyone. Again, it's good to see you all. Well done, you survived this chaos. I have a son called Joshua. If you don't know me, you don't know that, but I do. I have a son called Joshua, and he's now 2 years and three and a half months old. And Joshua is my joy and delight. He is the apple of my eye. I love him to bits. However, occasionally, and I know you're going to find this hard to believe, those of you that know him, and are very surprised at this, occasionally Joshua behaves in a way that I disapprove of, or Amy disapproves of. Can you believe that, those of you that know Joshua? Unbelievable, isn't it? And that might be he might not listen to what we're asking him to do or not do, or he might actively do something unkind. I know, hard to believe. Whether or not he understands, that's what he's doing. And when he does, usually after a warning or two to stop or to start doing what he's doing, we reluctantly take Joshua and give him a timeout. At home, the timeout takes place on the bottom step of the stairs. Joshua is exiled, if you like, until he's ready to say sorry for whatever it is he's done and return to the living room where he belongs. Now, early on in this process, you'd be forgiven for thinking that Joshua didn't understand the disciplinarian or corrective meaning of this action as he sort of took himself off happily singing and laughing to the bottom step, to his self-imposed exile at times. I want to go to the step. But occasionally he'd be upset on the bottom step, and Amy or I would comfort him in his exile from the living room while explaining to him the reason for it. Now, the step isn't intended as retributive punishment. You know, it's not an eye for an eye payment for the wrong that Joshua has done. The point of the step is restorative. We want Joshua to understand that certain actions have consequences. Certain behaviors have negative consequences. We want him to learn right and wrong and to be responsible for what he does. And crucially, we want him to understand that there's always a way back, that he doesn't belong on the step. He belongs in the living room. There's always forgiveness. And when he comes back, we make sure we remind him that he's our son and we love him very much. And there's cuddles and kisses and all kinds of fun. He belongs in the living room, not on the step. Now, I share that with you without wanting to be glib about it, because today's passage is about a people lost in exile from where they belong, from their home, as a result of their wrongdoing. But today's passage is about them being called to return home again. They weren't meant for exile. They weren't meant for this place they found themselves in now, which was Babylon. They were meant to be back home in a land given by God, as God's people shining a light for the world to see. Now, if you know the Old Testament at all, the exile is possibly the second most significant event of the Old Testament. The first being the Exodus, the liberation from Egypt. But then this, the exile, takes up such a huge portion of the Old Testament through the prophets and the stories about it. And it's a really, real tragic story. And the tragedy of the story is that the people of God have gone full circle. They were formed out of being brought out of slavery, out of oppression in Egypt, to a land of their own, to be God's people, with a promise and a purpose to be a light to the world. But now they found themselves back in slavery, back in Egypt, if you like, not Egypt, but Babylon, because they'd forsaken God. They'd broken his commandments, and instead of being a light to the world, they'd recreated Egypt in their own society. Injustice and oppression. And in their devastating campaign, the Babylonians came, led by King Nebuchadnezzar, which is a great name. And he destroyed Jerusalem, the holy city, and carried the people of Jerusalem, Judah, off into exile. However, by the time we reach this passage that we've read this morning, a new power has emerged on the world landscape, the Persians, led by Cyrus the Great. And they've overtaken the Babylonians. And with that, there's this hope that has emerged of a return home for the people of God to the promised land. And Cyrus was seen very much as this agent of God in delivering them from their enemies. Now, I don't know about you, but I suspect I know the answer to this. I've never been in exile, literally speaking. But I imagine that returning from exile isn't a straightforward thing. I imagine that in exile, baggage is acquired along the way. Guilt, shame, hurt, disappointment, disillusionment. And I imagine that there's a journey to take. Quite literally a journey to take, but also in a real deeper sense. Life has moved on for you, for the place that you left behind. And whilst the people of God were literally exiles, they were literally carried off from their home and forbidden from being there to another land. They were also exiles in a deeper kind of spiritual sense. There was a broken relationship with God. They weren't where they belonged. There was a lost sense of identity that we talked about. They were God's people with promises and calling. And that was forgotten, almost. Would God welcome them back? How would God welcome them back? Would God be angry with them? And for us, like I've said, it's unlikely that any of us will ever experience this kind of literal exile in our lifetime. But we might experience another kind of exile, maybe self-imposed, maybe not. And we may know others in our lives that feel like that too. This sense that we're not where we should be, where we belong, that we've been excluded in some way, either by ourselves, by our choices and actions, or by the way we've been treated, perhaps. But when through our sort of wrongdoing or doubts or whatever it might be, we're in exile from God, we wonder, will God welcome us back? Is God angry? Is he disappointed? Is he feeling vengeful towards us? And I think the people living in exile by the rivers of Babylon, as the song goes, surely had plenty of time to think about such things. After all, the reason they were in exile, as the prophet repeatedly said, was judgment for their sin, for the injustice and oppression that they'd created in their own land. So as they prepared for this return home, you might expect God to say, mightn't you, tell my people, see, this is what happens if you break my commands. Or tell my people, do you want this to happen again? But God doesn't say that. By this point in Isaiah, God's tone, the tone of the prophet, has changed radically. And at the start of chapter 40, we get these amazing words at this turning point in history. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. Her hard service has been completed. Her sin has been paid for. And you see there, God's purpose with judgment wasn't to punish and throw away the key. That's it. All over. The exile was part of a journey to somewhere better. God wanted to discipline his people for a better future. And notice this, that even in exile, and this is really important, I think, they didn't stop belonging to God. See what he calls them there? Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. They're still, even in the midst of their exile in Babylon, carried off to another land, they're still Jerusalem. They're still the people named and called by God. Their unfaithfulness didn't delegitimize that. You know, comfort in the midst of personal failure or corporate failure might seem a bit like a soft option, but to comfort someone who is broken and hurting, even if it's self-inflicted, can have incredible transformative effect. You know, it's no wonder Jesus said, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice." A friend of mine, a longtime friend of mine, became a Christian in a really dramatic way. His life was really completely transformed. But he had a lot of personal sort of brokenness in his life, and through his own personal pain, made a lot of choices that left him feeling lost and bitter and full of shame. And he went away from his church community, and his faith was in tatters on the floor, really. And I got frustrated at him at times. I got frustrated about the bitterness that I felt coming out of him, with the sort of hardness I felt from him in his heart. But my friend's life was radically transformed for a second time. And in the unlikeliest of places, which happened to be my stag do, a group of lads went away to Rhosyllu in Wales, beautiful part of Wales. And on that trip, a group of lads was coming together as friends, many of them Christians. And on that trip, my friend experienced such love and acceptance from those people and simple faith in an ordinary group of young men. And in that moment, he felt God speak to him and calling him back through this welcome, through this tenderness, through this comfort. And something broke in him on that weekend. And it wasn't a harsh word about the way he was currently living or his lifestyle. It wasn't a judgment about where he found himself. It was through comfort, through love, through tenderness. And his life has incredibly changed, and he's now actually a minister himself, which is brilliant. What this people needed, the people of Jerusalem and Judah, was healing, that they might return home, knowing who they were, God's beloved and holy people. They'd experienced the pain of their sin. They'd experienced judgment. But it was time to return home where they belong. But before they return home, and we see this as the chapter goes on, there's work to be done. You can't go home the same way that you left. There's preparation to be made. And we get these amazing words that are so familiar, made familiar to us a lot by John the Baptist, actually. Later on, it says, "A voice of one calling, in the desert, prepare the way for the Lord." You know, when I read what follows here, my instinct is to go, "Oh, I don't like this." And the reason I don't like this is that it talks about creating this kind of boring, sterile environment. Every valley raised up, every mountain made low, rough ground level, rugged places plain. That sounds like a really boring place to me, doesn't it? Does it to you? You know, I've been to Israel and it's beautiful. I love the ruggedness of it. It's incredible. Why this? But, you know, obviously this isn't about a spot of landscape design, you know. Before you go home, sort out the landscape. It's not like that. That's not God's priority. And it's not the people's priority, surely. You know, before roads as we know them, and I'm not an expert on this kind of thing, but a king going on a journey required the way to be prepared for the safest and most straightforward route for the king to wherever he was going. So the message here to the people in exile was this: prepare for God's return to you. Clear away those things that get in the way of God's coming to you. Sweep away the obstacles. Do the things that make room for God in your lives. Because whilst returning from exile was a very physical reality for the people of God, it also symbolized something a lot deeper. A return to relationship, covenant. A return to God's ways, God's holy law. And notice, this isn't just about the people returning to God, clear the way and go back to God. This is clearing the way so that God can come to you, the God who longs for you. You know, many, many years later, Jesus tells perhaps his most famous story, parable, of a son who humiliates his father, takes his inheritance early, and goes off and squanders it on reckless living. And he ends up himself humiliated, eating from a pig trough far from home. And Jesus says in the story, when he comes to his senses and he's full of remorse and he sees what he's become, he makes his way home. But on the way, his father sees him. His father's looking for him. He sees him and he does the unthinkable, which we don't understand because we don't really understand the culture. But it was unthinkable for a father to pull up his cloak and run. It was undignified. Fathers didn't do that. But this father did. And he ran to his son and he embraced him. And his son could barely say the word sorry before his father said, "It's okay, you're home." And you know, I think the people of Judah, kind of like that, a lost, broken people far from home, welcomed, restored, forgiven. You know, Advent for us today is a time that we remember that God changed the course of history by coming to us. God came to us when we couldn't make our way to God. Jesus, Gemma said it, Jesus, God's Son, the image of God, made his home among us. Through his life showed us a new way of living. And through his death brought us forgiveness that we could not earn. And through his resurrection brought us hope of eternal life. And as I've said, you know, you might not know what it feels like to be in a physical exile. I don't. But maybe you understand what it feels like to be on the outside for whatever reason. Through your own bad choices that have hurt you and others, through doubt, and you can feel on the outside in your doubts, just through inner conflicts of shame and all kinds of stuff. Or maybe you know others at this time, in this season, that feel like that. And my prayer from reading this passage today is that in this Advent, amidst all the noise, you and I hear the words of the Good Shepherd. Of Jesus, who says these words in Matthew, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Comfort, comfort. Maybe exile feels like too strong a word for you, but you know there's barriers in your life that stop the coming of God to you. Mountains that need to come down. Maybe ambitions that are in the way of God's ambitions for you. Habits that are causing you hurt and pain. Or maybe there are valleys that need to be raised up. Space in your life for God. Quiet, prayer, service. So wherever you are and whatever season you're in, I pray this season that you have a place that you know you belong with God. You belong in the living room, not on the step. God whose word endures beyond our few short years. And who gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. Amen. I want to invite Helen to just play for us for a few minutes. And a couple of things I was thinking about in response to this are, what barriers need to be swept away in our lives? This is Advent. This is a season of waiting for the coming of Christ, the Christ who is always coming to us. What barriers are in our lives? What mountains need to be raised up? No, sorry, the other way around. Brought down. What valleys need to be raised up? Are there issues in our lives that need dealing with? And let's take this opportunity, as Helen just plays through this song, just to think about those things, to pray about them, to bring them before God quietly. What can we do today, this week, to make way for the coming of the Lord?